I looked upon you as a young man.
Well, I guess everything you don't change.
He ought to have better contact with Hanoi and with either the man in Rangoon or Paris, some other place. And the best man that he thought to have this contact was a fellow like Will Clayton or Gene Black. Well, Will Clayton's dead.
Yeah.
And I thought even the chairman of foreign relations knew it, but let me call you back, Doctor. My man comes in, give me a checkup every day, and he just walked in, and I wanted to get him away from here. So, Bill Moyer went back to see him yesterday, told him that I had called in Gene Black. Gene Black was going to take a trip out to Asia later in the spring, that he was going to make himself available to these folks and be as reasonable as he could in proposing a get-together. Well, Fulbright immediately said, well, I don't think anything will come of it, but I just thought that we ought to be doing everything we can, and so forth. So Bill said, all right, well, that's what we're going to do, and don't tell anybody, and so forth. And so I don't think anybody knows it but you and Rusk and Fulbright and Moyers as of this moment. I don't know what will happen later. Pearson's broadcasting over the radio Saturday and Sunday and Monday that we're in terrific shape because the National Guard recruits are drilling in civilian clothes, and we don't have any way to phase the poor boys. Mahon said last night that he thought they'd broken through with us the first time on something to talk and fuss about. That Green had testified. Yeah,
I think I'm on top of that, Mr. President.
The Marines had no cotton trousers.
Just absolute baloney. And this morning I'm sending Paul Ignatius, who's the assistant secretary in charge of that area, up with other people, and I think we'll overcome that. That occurred Friday afternoon, I guess it was, and Green was stupid as hell to do what he did. But I think we've got it under control, and I think the record will be set straight this morning. We are short of clothing, no question about that, but nobody's without clothes, Army clothes.
What about Marine?
Marine clothes. No military person is without military clothes, and appropriate military clothes.
What he says, though, is that we got all this call-up coming in, and that they can't get clothes for 14 months.
Just crazy as hell. Every call-up, every individual call is getting clothes. What they've done is cut down the basic issue at a time a man comes in civilian clothes into the first reception camp or center. Let's say in the past he got three uniforms, now he gets two, or if he got two, he now gets one. And that change has been made. But everybody is getting the clothes that they're supposed to have to carry out their military functions.
All right. Are we doing all we can to make them work around the clock on our orders?
Yes. You mean the clothing companies?
Yep.
Yes. Yes. We don't have...
Why the hell does it take 14 months to build a pair of britches?
Oh, I don't think it does. I don't think it does. But there is a very rapid inflow this year, and it'll probably be, I don't think it's 14 months. I think it's on the order of 8 or 9 months before we get our inventories up to the desired levels. I think it's September, something like that, that we estimate will be the point at which we get our inventories back to normal relationships between inflow and outflow. But in the meantime, everybody will get an overcoat or a raincoat or whatever the hell it is they're supposed to have at the time they're supposed to have it, but they won't have as many pairs as they normally do have.
How many men do you have out there now?
It's about, I would guess today, it's about 215,000. It was 210,000 about a week ago.
And what do you have?
And we've got roughly another 20 on the way, and we're just sending the battalions at least as early as he wants them. We're trying to accelerate the next 3 to 6 to beat his schedule a little bit, based on your interest in accelerating. And by the way, I told Joe Alsop that you're of your concern to get the troops there as fast as they could be used, and your instruction to me to even accelerate beyond Westmoreland's requirements if that should be desirable, and we were doing so. And I'm just sitting here right now looking at a report, and it says that this is in relation to the Baldwin article that said we have no capacity to put troops anywhere in the world. It says, with a reserve call-up, which you would, of course, have if you met another emergency in Berlin or something like that, we could deploy in 90 days 9 division forces. That's about 81 battalions. Today we have 43 maneuver battalions in Vietnam, so you can get some idea of what a sizable force this would be to put somewhere else in the world. It'd be a total on the order of 9 divisions. Each division force has 50,000 men, and it'd be on the order of 450,000 men. Tremendous force. There isn't any other nation in the world, with the possible exception of Russia, can do anything like this. And as far as Vietnam is concerned, without caller reserves, we can put another 21 battalions there by June, and that fully meets Westmoreland's schedule, and 40 more by the end of January. So we've got a tremendous capacity here to meet this. Now, it is true, Mr. President, I don't want to mislead you on this, it is true that we're going to be short as hell of some of these support personnel, but we're scrounging around, and every passing day we find another way of meeting one of these shortages of support personnel without calling reserves. At the moment, I'd say the odds are very good that unless Westmoreland changes his requirements, we can get by this year without calling the reserves. It'll be really tough, and there'll be lots of criticism, but we can do it, and I'm sure you're right in thinking that it's wise from the point of view of the national economy to get by as long as we can without those reserves. And from a military point of view, although I haven't got the people in the building yet to agree with this, I think it's wise militarily, because it leaves untapped this huge contingency reserve. I've got a meeting scheduled with all the secretaries at 8:30 this morning. I'm going to rub their nose in this. I sent them papers out Saturday and had them work on them yesterday, and in effect that's what it says, that militarily we are stronger if we don't call a reserve.
Well, I'd sure shove that. Mahon spent the evening with me and Birchby and some other young folks, but he got off down to the end of the swimming pool, and he said that that you were the most superior person he'd ever dealt with, and that he loved you, and he wanted to take care of you, and he did every way in the world he could, that you needed no one to take care of you, knew everything that you were doing, and you needed no help, but he wanted to, but he thought they were penetrating you because your people weren't as smart in the Navy as they were in other places, that MacDonald was not good, that Green was not good, that Nitze was not good.
Nitze is good, but he's not working quite well.
Well, he said that, I asked him, I said, don't tell me that Nitze is not smart, because Forrestal and Hatch and all of them thought Nitze was a bright young boy. Well, he said, I don't give a damn what they thought, he's not a good witness.
Yeah, I agree with him on that. I agree, and I don't think it's that he's not smart, he's just not working, and MacDonald is the Navy is just grumpy, they just...
Well, you gave him his carrier, I thought that settled satisfied.
Well, hell, it's what did you do for me yesterday, and the real problem in the Navy, Mr. President, is that they want to bomb Hanoi, and they feel it's this one arm tied behind your back argument, and today I get the first draft of this long CIA report I've had been working on for about a month and a half on the whole bombing analysis, and I hope that it'll persuade the Navy a little bit that they wouldn't accomplish what they think they would if they went all out on the bombing program. But anyhow, that's what's really bugging MacDonald.
Wilson's calling his elections abroad. I just hope that we can get our things settled as much as we possibly can with these 3 or 4 votes. I wonder why you don't tell Russell 10 minutes before your hearing this morning that the president called you this morning. Well, he may think I'm lobbying through you. I just tell him that you understood from that you report you at dinner last night, and a friend reported. I would never say a senator. I'd just say a friend reported that here's what they did. That you noticed New York Times.
Yeah.
That the group met Fulbright's office.
Yeah.
And that Bill Moyer saw Fulbright yesterday. And you talked to him about it. As you understand, that the president feels that any vote beyond this is going to be confusing and be misunderstood, and that the country, because of Morse's performance on the television, would be better off if they just vote Morse up or down. Is there any chance of getting that done on your bill? That's what you'd like to see done on your bill.
Yeah.
because you have an interest in your bill, and in that way, and say if it's not, well, we're liable to get a bunch of emotions on the economic bill over in the House, that some of them are talking to us about wanting to offer motions over there. And what we don't want to start new motions. We just want to keep old ones. And see if you can't...
The lease owners expect Sunday back in Washington one of these days, perhaps as Secretary of State.
And nominating Bundy Secretary of State, yes. Now, what did you start saying?
Marcus Child's nomination.
No, this is the RCA, NBC. Bundy has a memo to me saying that he thinks we ought to let Cooper go. Cooper's not very good. He's a disappointment. He's on his Vietnam desk. Suggests that we bring your man McNaughton in. Says you'll upset. Hand me those three memos I had over here. Those I had over here.